Thank you. I'll start with a short reminder of what is this center focus problem. Maybe it should be considered as one of the most notoriously difficult problems in computational dynamics. I'll explain why it is a problem in computational dynamics, but its history is full of dramatic events, a lot of computations, and I'll explain some pieces of this. let's consider a vector field. X point is equal to y plus f of xy. Y point is equal minus x plus g of xy. So this is a plane system. F and g are polynomials without free terms and without linear terms. So this is a linear part, and linear part is chosen in such a way that its trajectories are concentric closed circles. Then we perturb it by this polynomial. The problem is to give an explicit condition on f and g for all the trajectories to be closed. This is a center focus problem. It was posed by Poincaré, not exactly in this form. This is a specific case, but I'll not go into detailed description of the history. But around 1880s, Poincaré discussed this problem for plane vector fields. And okay, it's clear that by small perturbations we can get pictures like this. So this one kind of focus that can appear. Another, it may look like this. Of course, the rotation, okay, it's the same. No, it is not the same. Yeah, this goes in this direction. We may have a finite number of limit cycles and some trajectories spiraling between them. All this is possible. Infinite number of closed trajectories is impossible. Here, it is not a difficult result. One of possible situations is like this, that all the trajectories around the origin are closed. This is called center. And one example is if we take f to be certain partial derivative dh over dy and g, partial derivative minus dh over dx, is so-called Hamiltonian case, and it's easy to see that the trajectories are level curves of the following motion integral, 1 half x squared plus y squared plus h of xy is constant. So we get a small perturbation of this circular picture. So this is one of center components. Okay, and the answer is not known already for f and g of degree 3. The only known situation is f g of degree 2. It was obtained by Dulac, in a sense, not exactly a student of Poincaré, but he worked with Poincaré, and in 1905 he got this classification for degree 2. That's it. Of course, a lot of special cases are known, but the complete answer is not known already for f and g, non-homogeneous of degree 3. For homogeneous of degree 3, the answer is still known. Okay, so this is a center focus a problem, and it's closely related to Hilbert-Sixtine's problem, second part of Hilbert-Sixtine's problem. It is, okay, once more, I don't put it exactly, but say, for system of this form, how many isolated closed trajectories may it have for a given degree of polynomials f and g? Okay, this is probably one of two really surviving Hilbert problems till today. The first, no doubt, zeros of Riemann zeta function, but this is nothing is known. Absolutely nothing. The answer is not known for degree for the Hilbert 16 problem. The answer is not known for degree 2. The center focus problem sounds a little bit more technical. It is less popular than Hilbert 16, but technically it turns out that, okay, to solve this we need first to solve this. It can be shown that we cannot get explicit bound and Hilbert problem on the number of limit sets without explicitly answering this question. Okay, so this is a background. Now, why it is a problem in computational dynamics? Okay, it's pretty easy to see, and it was classically known, and this is a way of investigation, that one can write an infinite system of equations. Sk of f g equal to zero for k 1, 2, and these equations are algebraic in the coefficients of f and g. So f and g are polynomials, so for each fixed degree of f and g we get an infinite sequence of algebraic equations. They can be easily written. It's algorithmic, and this equation can be computed one after another, but they're extremely complicated. Their degree grows. In this setting, even in the easiest case of f and g of degree 2, after all the possible reductions, the minimal number of unknowns is 5, if I remember. 5, yes. They're extremely complicated. What is the natural approach? Now, this is infinite sequence of equations. It is known that the vanishing of this equation is equivalent to the center. So the question is how to solve it. Now, by Hilbert finiteness theorem, in fact, we know that a certain finite number of equations is enough. Nobody knows how many. And I don't know, is this problem algorithmic or whatever? I don't know what is the status of this. Of this question. Formally one can say that this is the main difficulty. Would we know how many equations do we need? Okay. I don't like this explanation because better would be to understand the structure of these equations. And once more, they're very complicated and it's very difficult to see any reasonable structure in this equation, so general results, as far as I know, lack in this problem. There are a lot of specific conditions, of course, analyzing in qualitative theory of differential equations, there are many, many cases which were analyzes, and some cases are well understood, and usually this analysis is highly non-trivial, but no general information on solution of this equation. Okay, now, so you probably would agree that it is a problem of computational dynamics. Not of there are several directions in computational dynamics. So this is one of these directions, and this was the way this problem was attacked. People tried to solve this equation, and how can we stop here? It is the following: if we start analyzing this equation and find that we analyze five first equations of this system. If we find by an analysis that these equations imply so-called integrability, let me not go into detailed definition, but a certain condition which guarantees the integrability, that's it. We don't need to go further because integrability guarantees us the closeness of trajectory. So this is a question of good luck. If we start to analyze extremely difficult equation, and if for degree 2, Dulac was happy enough to get a list which was which covered all the possible cases, and in each case it was guaranteed that we have a center. It was not a trivial computation. Then it was by Bautin. It was these computations were somehow improved, and then some results for homogeneous FNG were obtained in the 40s and 50s, also computing by hand. So this is a question of explicit solving of system of algebraic equations. And one of surprising points here that, to my best knowledge, we have now plenty of symbolic computer programs. We can solve a lot of equations. Of course, they help. But I am not aware of any general result in this equation obtained with a computer. So maybe he limited responsibility, but as far as I know, it's very, very surprising. All the stories about symbolic numerical computation, solving these systems, and computer do not help at all. Okay? Of course, on the way there were mistakes, corrections, and I'll not go into this history. If we take also Hilbert Sigson problem, it is really dramatic, but very interesting, but it is not what I'm going to present. Okay, so what is the story I would like to present here? In fact, we can, from this equation, we can pass to the following so-called Abel differential equation. Y prime is equal to P of X Y squared plus Q of X Y cubed. By kind of polar transformation. So P and Q will be trigonometric polynomial, the natural interval will be minus pi. It is so-called Cherkass transformation. It's more or less polar coordinates, but not exactly, with some correction. I'll not write it exactly in detail. So, and the question of closeness of trajectories becomes the following problem. Here is minus pi. Trajectories are periodic if they have the same value. So y of a is equal to y of minus pi is equal to y of pi. Okay, this is a translation of some cases, of homogeneous cases of this center focus problem. We started, it was well known, and many people work on this. I'll mention Albers and Lloyd paper of, I think, 89, where they investigated this equation. I'll mention it also later, but there were a lot of papers. And then, the point which I think was important to realize here was the following, that maybe even one, first of all, one has to let more freedom for P and Q. The classical problem forces us to put trigonometric polynomials, but let's forget it. Let's consider usual polynomials, or maybe Lipschitz functions, or maybe delta functions. The first point, important point to realize was that it is important to get this freedom. And the second point was we can write explicitly these center equations, and we have some structure. We have some structure which leads to. Let me put it this way. Maybe this center focus problem was not, and also Hilbert problem to some extent, were problematic in the following sense. In contrast with many other problems of this list, there are almost no techniques, known classical techniques to apply to this problem. Okay, you have to analyze a system of algebraic differential equations. You don't see any structure, somehow it's too narrow place to work. And this problem indeed existed in all the long history. So the new point which I would like to present here is the following, that if you consider this equation, we see a certain structure in the center equations, which leads to some kind of moments equations. And moments is absolutely different theory. It's the heart in analysis, of analysis. If we get moments, we have plenty of techniques, we have fantastic relations, and this is a story I'll try to present here. Okay, so having this equation, we can we now consider it just on interval AB. We don't assume P and Q to be periodic, nothing, just two functions. I'll even not specify exactly the class. Later I'll do this. We call it center if for solutions we have Y of A identically equal to Y of B. Of course, I have also to specify when it happens, and maybe there are singularities in the middle, but if you analyze this equation, you see that for small initial values, it is regular. The regularity diff grows, so at least for small initial values, we can pose this correctly, and even in complex case, no ramifications for small initial values. So this is a new definition of center. So the center focus problem is to give conditions on P and Q and A, B for this Trevor center. And then, now I'll write these algebraic equations. This is very, very easy because we can define a Poincaré mapping. So let's define Poincaré mapping phi, which maps YA. It's the first return mapping. It goes from this value to this value. So not a difficult fact is the following, that this mapping can be represented by a convergent Taylor series, y plus some k2 to infinity, vk of p2ab, y to the power k. And this is a convergent power series. By the way, all the story is not limited to Abel equation of this form. We can put infinite series in y, so only assuming analyticity in y is enough. And in this way, it takes a little bit different, perspective, because then I can say the following. It is a question about the Poincaré mapping of the most general differential equation, y prime is equal f of xy. So this is Poincaré mapping, and this problem is a problem of, one of the problems related to this Poincaré mapping. Okay, now probably, arguably, Poincaré mappings present one of the most mysterious classes of functions in analysis. Because the difficulty is that no analytic representation of this is known. No integral representation, no differential equation for this, nothing. So it's very difficult to handle this Poincaré mapping, but it has a very simple Taylor expansion. In this specific case, of course, a lot of Poincaré mappings appear in dynamics, first return mapping. Okay, so center focus problem is maybe one of first problems one can ask about this Poincaré mapping. And Hilbert 16 problem is the second. How many solutions this equation may have? Y of A is equal to Y of B. Okay, now, what is, if we have Y of A identically equal to Y of B center, look at this expansion. This simply means that it is Y. The Taylor expansion is unique, so if it is Y, then all these terms must be zero. So center is equivalent to the following system of equations. Vk of pq, so ab, is equal to zero for k, 2, 3, and so on. So here is the infinite system of equations. And they can be easily computed by certain recurrence relation. A simple linear recurrence relation which contains integration or differentiation, if you want, and so we can compute whatever we want. But one of important advantages of this form of the problem is that some structure can be easily seen. And here is the structure. I have written it. So the main point is a linear combination of, so this Vk are linear combinations of iterated integrals of the form P in different orders, iterated integrals of P and Q. Now, this is important, so I put it in accurate form. So let's consider indices, multi-indices alpha equal alpha 1 to alpha f with each alpha j or 1 or 2. Then we take h1 p and h2 is q. And we define iterated integral by I alpha as written here. So we start, the most linear integral is h alpha, so it is p or q according to alpha f equal 1 or 2. And then we integrate. The last integral is from a to b. So this is the usual form of iterated integral on the interval AB. So here is the structure of this VK. VK of PQ is a linear combination of these iterated integrals with the sum of indices in alpha exactly equal to k minus 1. So I'll explain this a little bit later. It is a kind of weighted homogeneous polynomial in P and Q. And the second important... Of course, one can give exact formulas for n alpha. And there is a non-trivial, but combinatorics here, in particular, the number of terms is equal to the case Fibonacci number in this term. And this is the easy part of combinatorics. There are more difficult combinatorial properties here, and some are at least look untractable. Is this iterated integrals are well known to present a pretty complicated algebraic structure. I mean, even the word problem, kind of word problem, appears here in the structure of this iterated integrals. I'm not going to this direction, just as shown here. What is important that if P appears only once, we can integrate by parts and we get what is written here in proposition 2. So the terms of degree, say, 1 in P, this means that P appears only once, is the following expression. Integral of A of B, Q, okay, here, let me write. Q big is integral of Q small, and P big is integral of P small, primitive. So we get a moment-like expressions. Q LP, and the term of degree K minus 3 is P to the power K minus 3, Q. We get this moment expressions, and under assumption that P and Q take equal values on the end, the higher and lower terms vanish. So these are the, so we have the following nice situation. These iterated integrals can be considered as polynomials in P and Q. And here, I would like to insist on the following. I definitely don't want to put inside the coefficients of P and Q in any way. I assume that P and Q belong to some linear spaces, but let me consider them as polynomials just in this form of iterated integrals. I mean, integral PQ is a bilinear form in P and linear in Q. So I consider this as a polynomial of degree 2 in P and of degree 1 in Q. Of course, substituting the specific coordinates of P and Q will give me usual polynomials of the same degrees. But it is very important to keep this symbolic form because it is easier. Otherwise, we get out of all this story immediately. So So these iterated integrals are polynomials in PNQ, in symbols PNQ, assuming that this PNQ belong to certain linear spaces. Then they are polynomials in all the best sense we can get to this, and they are weighted homogeneous. The weight in P is 1, and the weight of P is 1, and the weight of Q is 2. So we have the sum of indices is equal to K minus 1, so what is called the Newton diagram, if you want, this generalized Newton diagram of this polynomial looks like this. Okay, this already some structure, a certain structure. Of course, it's well known that in the center equations, iterated integrals appear, do appear. But if you write it in the classical situation, the structure is so cumbersome that it's very difficult to trace it. Here, everything is absolutely explicit. So I think it's a kind of advantage of this story. Okay, so this is what we have for our center equations. And the most important thing at this moment is that, okay, these terms are zero, this and this are zero, and these are moments, integrals P K minus 3 X Q X dx, and these are moments, integrals Q, over 2, it depends on the parity of K. Let me not discuss it, minus 1 of x, p of x dx. Okay, so I'll assume from now on that q is fixed and only p is a free variable to make life a little bit easier. So if we put it this way, then this is the form of the linear terms in P of our center equations, and this is the form of the highest degree terms. This will very strongly help us in the analysis of this system of equations. I need two more, or at least one additional ingredient. Okay. Maybe better to say two. So I'll erase this introduction. So let me write once more this moment equation. So mk, which is integral, okay, mk in fact of p, q, a, b, is integral a to b, p to the power k, x, q of x, dx. And I put equal to zero. So these are center moment equations. Moment equations, and m tilde, m hat k, is integral a b q k of x p of x dx. So we get two systems of moment equations. One is we assume q fixed and only p variable. So this system is highly nonlinear, but still these are moments, and this system is simply linear in P. For fixed Q, it is linear in P. And now, in a sense, these two systems, it is a kind of sandwich. The true system of nonlinear equations or center equations is squeezed between these two systems. Okay, I would like it to be strong, to be in a stronger sense, but at least something can be said because of this specific property. Now, as it's clear from what I explained, the system of center equations is absolutely transcendental. We don't know, it's highly nonlinear, we don't know how to approach, no reasonable tools seem to be applicable. Now, these systems, it turned out that are highly non-trivial, but a lot of tools. A lot of tools of algebra and analysis to attack. And indeed, what happens now, and this I will try to explain, that almost all the investigation or effort are in analysis of these systems. When we started this topic about 15 years ago, by the way, I didn't mention all this is joint work with Jean-Pierre François, Miriam Briskin, Fyodor Pakovich, Nina Reutemann, and many other people somehow work here. When we started this about 15 years ago, the expectation was that it would be very difficult to connect directly moments with center equations. But that for moments, the answer is clear. And let me explain what was this conjectural answer. But now the situation is just opposite. The relation of the moments with the center is reasonably tractable, at least a part of it. But this system turns out to be, these systems of equations turned out to be very complicated. So, to explain this story, I need one more maybe ingredient in this picture, which also is very important. This is a kind of integrability condition. Of course, in the classical setting, the first integrals play the most important role. So, also here we have so-called first integral, and it is composition, so-called composition condition. It is like this, that P and Q allow a composition factorization. So it is P tilde of W of X. Q of X is Q tilde of the same W of X. And W glues together the end points of the interval. Okay. Now, there are many, we know today that there are many different composition conditions. And this format was introduced by Alvash and Lloyd in 89. Then we started working with this for polynomials. Today it's clear that there are various conditions of the various forms. There is so-called tree composition condition introduced by Alex Brudny. And in some cases, for rational functions, it is, one should add some homotopic conditions. Let me not doing this. Let's say for polynomials, it's just as written here, nothing more. But in other cases, we have to add some conditions. So, what is important here is that it is basically a very important integrability condition. Because if we have this, we can make a change of variables in whatever we want, in this problem, or in computation of the moments, or in computing the iterated integrals. And this brings us to integration over the closed loop, because W of A is equal to W of B. Let me say that if our functions were complex analytic regular, this immediately by Cauchy's theorem implies that everything vanishes. So this explains what is going on. I will not go into other sorts of this composition condition. It is important, but I simply have no possibility to put it here. So this is integrability condition. The integrability condition. Now, here we have a certain kind, also a certain kind of, I think, technical advantage in considering this equation. Why? Because in the classical setting, already in degree 3, and of course in higher degrees, all kinds of known integrability conditions start to multiply. It's a kind of zoo situation, well known in differential, in the qualitative theory of differential equations. We can classify Drell pitches, but very, very difficult to see a certain general structure. Of course, also here, composition is not the only one, but for example, because for trigonometric P and Q, we know that some cases of the classical problem can be translated here. So not only composition is the direction exists. And it is known that some of the classical components are composition components, some others are not. Say, if we work with P and Q usual polynomials, not trigonometric, up to this moment we don't know any other integrability condition. It's good, because then we can put conjectures, we can put a composition conjecture that says that for P and Q polynomials, the only center configurations are given by this composition. But of course, this is a little bit, not this is the main point. The main point is that this composition is a very rich algebraic structure. So composition algebra of polynomials was studied by Reed classically in 1922 and later, and it is highly non-trivial, but a lot is known. So this composition brings another kind of a key to the story, or important tool. There is a highly non-trivial algebraic structure, and its role grows with mainly in works of Fyodor Pakhovich, and I'll explain, but also in some other respects. So by now we have all the main ingredients in this story. So we have these center equations. Their solution is equivalent to the description of the center set, equivalent to the solution of center problem. We have moment equations, and we have composition condition. Now, composition condition is an integrability condition. So, integrability. So, I'll denote it composition condition, and maybe. Use this one. Mm-hmm. So, the relation is like this. Composition implies moments vanishing center, vanishing of iterated integrals. So everything vanishes. If you assume this composition, this integrability is the best possible sense. So all the ingredients of this system of equations vanish. And now, the most by now I realize that this is the most surprising fact in all this story. This is a kind of a miracle. It is that. Not always, but usually and in many cases, moments vanishing. Moments vanishing implies composition. So this was, in fact, our original observation with Jean-Pierre Francoise and Miriam Briskin in 1996. And somehow the argument was very simple. So we expected that that it is true that at least for polynomials moment vanishing implies composition. And then you see the picture becomes a very pretty interesting, because moments form only a very very small part of the center equations. And now by some miracle vanishing of the moments implies composition, which in turn implies vanishing of everything. So with this we can play. And we did, we tried to continue, but now, first of all, for polynomials we even put conjecture for a while, and unfortunately not only conjecture, but a theorem, saying that for polynomials, moment vanishing implies composition. This is not true. Pakhovich has found a counterexample to this. A pretty delicate, I plan to speak about this. But still, generically this is true for polynomials, and the reasons are simple. Usually you can explain it. I'll give some explanation. So, for a long time somehow I didn't realize that this is a kind of a miracle. Now I claim that it is highly unexpected. This is because of the following. I didn't put it in the proper way, but a composition condition is a kind of homotopy condition. It says that the loop formed by PQ is contractible in appropriate space. For polynomials, it is by itself because everything happens in C. But for other classes, this homotopy condition is a non-trivial topological condition. On the other hand, moments vanishing is a homological condition. It's a kind of Derham lemma, and on the other hand, this is a classical theory of Wermer, which explains a homological condition for moments vanishing. So there is a huge gap. And the gap is in fact, as I realize now, is filled by iterated integrals. So it is a classical theory of iterated integrals by Chen, and it was to me it was explained during many years by now by Alex Brudny, who developed it in to some extent and used in more specific applications of this sort. But what is this Chen theory? It is a kind of generalization of Derham theory. It says the following: that by Derham theory, a certain form or a certain loop is homological to zero if the integrals of all the differential forms of this loop are zero. Now, we can continue this. If we say that all the iterated integrals of the second order vanish, it turns out to be equivalent to the fact that this loop belongs to the commutator of the fundamental group. And if the third order iterated integrals vanish, then it belongs to the third commutator, so on. And so after all, if you have some finiteness condition on this, how many commutators in this group may happen, and we have enough iterated integrals, then the vanishing of all the iterated integrals implies that our loop is homotopic to zero, which is more or less our composition condition. You see, this is the story, and this vanishing of iterated integrals is necessary and sufficient. So it is a certain very specific property of polynomials, because if you are in the world of, say, Lipschitz and functions, it's not true. It cannot be true, because this implies only the Derham condition. It is homological to zero. Each iterated integral adds new conditions, and they all are different. That's it. It is necessary and sufficient. But by some miracle, we started to work with the classes of functions for which the very, very first of moment vanishing condition implies all the rest. So by now, this became the most intriguing part of the story from the point of view of moment equation. So we have to analyze moment equations, and hopefully we can get something also analyzing iterated integrals. But it is a project which till now only in very, very specific examples it was checked that adding iterated integrals really helps in this story. So this is more or less the picture of what is going on. Now, let me explain now, after this general explanation, let me explain now how to get some, complete, but some pieces of information about the center equations from what we have. And this scheme is not difficult. I mean, this is a kind of almost general nonsense, some pretty general algebraic geometry. Okay, maybe here. So So here are the center equations. The first fact is that there are linear terms in P, are moments. Now, let me introduce the following central definition for this story. P is moment definite if vanishing of the moments P, K, Q implies composition condition for P and Q. R is moment definite if R, K, S implies composition condition. Of course, accurately I have to specify the classes of R and the classes of S. Let me not doing this because otherwise I immediately go out of the time frame. So it turns out that it is a reasonable definition. For some specific functions, and for polynomials, for generic functions, for functions with many, many conditions, this is true. Moments of this form imply composition. But I intentionally give this definition not for polynomials, for symbols. I don't know what does it mean, and I still cannot put it absolutely in formal way, but let's play this game, because then I can give one theorem which is absolutely formal. It is the following. If Q is definite, is moment definite, then locally center set is equal to the composition set. Locally in P. So we consider this Abel equation, we fix Q, and we consider small p. Then in a certain neighborhood of the origin, the center set coincides with the composition. And you see, this is a kind of general nonsense. Now, what is the proof? Let's consider the linear part of the center equation. We have a huge system of nonlinear equations. Let's consider the linear part. The linear parts are moments. The vanishing of the moments, because Q is definite, the vanishing of the moments implies composition. Composition implies the by this very general fact implies the vanishing of all the rest. Okay, so in algebraic geometry it's called Nakayama lemma. If we have a system of algebraic equations, linear parts define a certain subset, and the nonlinear terms vanish from this subset, then locally the set of solutions coincides with the set of solutions of the linear part, and this is composition. That's it. By the way, it's not difficult. This Nakayama lemma is very easy. We just write a kind of linear system, Jacobian. We see that it is non-zero, solve it, and that's it. I will not give the proof, but... Okay, so you see, this part is easy. It's a kind of a general nonsense. Another piece of the same general nonsense. Let's denote N, V, the set of non-definite polynomials. Not definite P now, not Q, but P. So, once more, I intentionally do not specify where and how, because my point is to stress the formal part of the story, and that this part is a kind of general nonsense. So theorem two is the following. Now just let me make one the following step. I compactify. We have a set of affine equations. Here are the system of center equations. Okay, as usual in algebraic geometry, we can consider projective compactification. We just take consider this. We add one variable, put it properly the equations and consider the affine part, the affine space is the affine part of the projective space. So the natural question, what happens at infinity? And it's immediate that the equations at infinity are the highest homogeneous terms of the affine equations. And by this formula, we know that the highest homogeneous terms are once more moments. So theorem two, center set at infinity contains a composition set, and center set at infinity is contained in composition set union with non-definite. So we can squeeze it at infinity at least between two sets. No, first of all, why it contains composition set? Because composition implies vanishing of all the moment equation. So this immediate. It implies center. So this immediate. Why it is contained in a composition set a union with non-definite? Because we have the following non-linear equations. Pk q is equal to zero. This is the system of equations at infinity. This is a moment equation, but q is fixed and p is variable. So it is a system of highly non-linear equations. But what do we know? That for sure composition, those p which satisfy composition form a part of solution, because composition implies this vanishing. What else may happen? I don't know exactly, but if this happens and there is no composition, p must be non-definite. simply by definition. Definition says that definite are those which imply composition. That's it. So solutions of this system are contained in a composition union with non-definite. So absolutely general nonsense. But this analysis at infinity allows us to prove and this theorem already may give you something. Why? Because in many specific cases we know something about non-definite classes. Okay, now I go to very, very recent results, or maybe by Fyodor Pakovich. So all what I present now is even not theorem with very, very small t, even not this, a kind of, you know, good wishes. But Pakovich told me that he can prove that for polynomials, the dimension of non-definite is at most one-fourth of the total dimension of the space of polynomials. Okay, if so, then for free we get a piece of information about this center set. It is contained in composition and addition, which is of not so high dimension. I don't know. It's very, very new, so let me not comment on it. But I would like just to illustrate how this machinery works. But on this way we can get more substantive results. For example, I'll give just one example, that if we have q, if degree q plus 1 is prime, and degree p doesn't exceed twice degree q, then by the same reasoning roughly, we can get that center consists only of alpha q, p equal alpha q. This is a composition for degree of q prime, or q plus 1 prime. So, and possibly a finite number of other points. This already, you know, substantial result, because it says that for a pretty large class of p, of q, fixed, the only center configurations are proportional to q, or maybe a certain mysterious finite number of points. And this is once more almost for free, because it comes from an algebraic geometric analysis at infinity. So you see, this kind of machinery works by now, somehow works. Of course, I didn't mention some serious technical difficulties, because to get, this is okay, but to get this kind of results, we have to analyze not only the infinite set, but a neighborhood of infinity. And it is much more complicated. But let me not to go into this technicality. So this is the story. there is an absolutely formal machinery which works for any P and Q, and then it is a highly non-trivial and I will say beautiful piece of work. It's not mine, so I can use, you know, strong words. It's mostly is done by now by Fyodor Pakhovich and Michael Muzhichuk, relating to concerning to this specific moment vanishing problem. What can be said if we know? What can be said if all these moments equations vanish? Okay, so maybe it's a good time to more or less to stop. Let me just say a couple of words. What I plan to do on this second lecture. In fact, I just brought this to the point where I more or less hope to bring it to this moment vanishing problem. So next time I plan to present the most recent results of Pakhovich and Muzhichuk, which gives a beautiful complete solution of the moment vanishing problem for polynomials. And you will see it's okay. I like it very much. And it is a different kind of mathematics. It involves representation theory, very delicate theory of finite groups, some arithmetic. I cannot follow their proofs, but okay. Till now I somehow use them. this is one story. And the second story, generalization to this moment vanishing to several dimensions. Now, in this second story I depart from differential equations. The reason, there are two reasons for generalization to higher dimensions. The first was given recently by Wenhua Zhao, who found connections of this story with, okay, ultimately with Jacobian conjecture. Once more, I don't understand much of this, but at least some of his observations I'll present. And there are very beautiful related results in representation theory by Olivier Mathieu. He also analyzed this equation of this sort, moment equations, in 97, at least. So I'll present at least a piece of this. And then another motivation is in signal processing. And I'm happy to say that, I mean, it is not imaginary. I do not claim that it is practical at the moment, but the relations are not imaginary. In fact, this moment vanishing equations describe, how to say, a kind of invisible, still sets for certain kind of measurements. So I'll explain this relation. And with permission of organizers, I will leave last few minutes of this talk for a kind of entertainment, I mean, a kind of joke. I'll show one application. I'll explain a couple of words of mathematical difficulties, but not more because I have no time. I'll show simply a certain tool for producing, easy producing of animations. And I'll connect it to some extent, but of course, at least I'll not try to make it not speculative. Okay, so thank you.